How's it going, everyone? Welcome back to the Young Wealth Podcast. If you're new here, I'm your host, Ethan Lang. Before we get into today's episode, hit that follow button or subscribe button dependent on which platform you're listening to this on. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, consider leaving a 5-star rating and review. Thank you all so much for tuning into today's episode. Let's bring on our guest and dive straight in. I hope you all enjoy. Welcome back to another episode of the Young Wealth Podcast. I'm your host, Ethan Lang, and I actually have a very special guest on today. He is widely known as The Money Guy because he has The Money Guy Show. He's a huge role model of mine, and you're about to see why. Help me in giving a warm welcome to Brian Preston. How are you doing, Brian?
Oh, Ethan, thanks so much for having me on. I mean, this gets me excited. I mean, the fact that this is the Young Wealth Podcast, I mean, this is everybody I want to get the message on what we're doing on the Money Guy Show.
That's awesome to hear. So yeah, if that's the case, let's just dive right into it. And like you said, it is the Young Wealth Podcast. So you're a little bit older than some of the other guests that I've interviewed, but I think it's great because I think you're going to bring a lot of experience. So my first question is, you know, what are the traits and the habits that you've instilled that have helped you have a successful life?
Yeah, well, I mean, the first thing, I was a natural tightwad all through growing up. I mean, I come from a family where we didn't have a lot of extra money laying around. So it kind of, you know, sharpened up my ability to do a lot with a little. I mean, I was the guy who perfected the $7 date night. Somehow I'm married. I don't know how that worked out, but it is one of those things where I think being naturally good with money, meaning I didn't let it just escape easily, also being super disciplined. And then I had a teacher in high school who actually shared that if I could save $100 a month, he told the entire economics class, if we could save $100 a month, we'd all be millionaires by the time we retired. And that's all I needed. As soon as I heard that, I was like, I could save $100 a month because I was working in fast food at the time, working a drive-through. And I was like, even with a job like in fast food for Hardee's, I could do this. And that kind of woke up a fire within me that was like, hey, let's actually start doing this deferred gratification concept and start creating wealth.
Gotcha. So then, like you said, you think discipline was that major thing, like non-financially related? You think the discipline is what really carried over?
Yeah. And then also having a vision for the future, because I think it's very easy to get caught up in what you don't have or the limitations, mm-hmm. especially if you don't come from money or you don't come from a household that makes good money. You can kind of create your own little limitations, you know, and those personal limitations can play crazy mind tricks on you. So just having that teacher who took an interest in me as well as the rest of the class and just shared, hey, you know, you too could do this, kind of unlocked a portion of my brain that kind of opened up just the thought process that this wealth wasn't something only for a small select group, that I could do it as well. And that's where the passion for books like The Wealthy Barber, The Millionaire Next Door, and then I was off to the races on trying to self-educate myself as much as possible on this concept, because my parents didn't know anything about investing. CDs were their idea of investing. So when I found out after reading, you know, like I said, The Wealthy Barber, Millionaire Next Door, that, you know, that you could actually start buying mutual funds at the time. Now there's index funds where you could just buy into the success of the economy. I mean, it's all so much easier now. I think for somebody your age, Ethan, there is not a better time to create wealth than right now, because back when I started, you had to pay a commission of like 2.5% to 5% on every dollar you invested just to get access to an investment mutual fund or to the stock market. Now everything is absolutely free and you can do it right through the internet. So there's no barriers, there's no excuses. And you can start with as little as, you know, a few bucks a month.
Yeah. And that's the awesome thing about, like, you're right, starting right now. And I think a lot of people are a little bit, you know, daunted with, you know, getting started, and they don't know, you know, how much do I need to invest to retire? All these questions, you know, at a young age. And you've created something called the Wealth Multiplier. And can you explain a little bit what that is and exactly how you guys came up with it?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things. I was thinking about how powerful $1 is. And let me set this up, is that I can remember when I was in my 20s, you look at somebody in their 30s or even 40s, and you go, man, I'm jealous of what they have and where they're at. But then I started realizing, wait a minute, I bet I have more than they had when they were 20. I bet I have, you know, cause just because I was disciplined, I was saving. And I was like, wait a minute, there has to be something to this, what every dollar is worth by age. And then I started, I'm a real nerdy guy. I love my financial calculators. Mm-hmm. I started doing the power of compounding growth. And all you have to do is trying to figure out what $1 could become for a 20-year-old, for a 25-year-old, and for a 40-year-old. And what you'll quickly realize, assuming just simple rates of return, you know, we used like 10% for the 20-year-old, and then we have it drop down to 9% for the 30, 8% for the 40-year-old, because that's the way life works as you change your risk profile. But here's what we found. $1 for a 20-year-old is worth $88, meaning every dollar you can save has the potential to turn into $88, but also every dollar you don't spend has the potential to become $88. For a 40-year-old, that dollar, same dollar, only has the potential to become $7. And that's the part that, I mean, I think would blow most people's mind, is that how can a 20-year age difference result in such a huge difference in outcome? And I think if we could teach that to every young person, they would be much more deliberate with how much they save, how much they spend, and become more purposeful and focused on trying to make sure they're maximizing the investments while they're young. Because that is, you know, I talk about the three components of wealth, which is the first one is discipline. The second one is having enough margin in your life that you create money. And then you have put that money to work by investing that creates the third thing, which is the most important, which is time. You've got to have time in the market so that the compounding growth actually works for you. And this also helps because, like I said, if you're in your 20s, early 20s, and you're looking at somebody who's 40 and you're like, gosh, I mean, they're just set up, or I wish I had that. Just think about that math I just told you, that every dollar you have as a 20-something is likely at a factor of tenfold bigger than what their money could be. And if you think in those terms, you know, the sky's the limit on what you can create for yourself.
Yeah, and so many people don't realize that time is that huge factor. And just by being 20, even if you're starting at nothing, you know, you have that huge advantage over someone who would have started investing 20 years later. But I also know that looking at myself, you know, when I started out, I could have seen this and I still would have been like, well, yeah, but I probably have to, you know, be an expert stock picker. I've got to have to figure all this out. What would you say to someone that would think that, you know, they're seeing this like, oh yeah, my money would have the potential to grow this much, but I'm not good enough to be able to, you know, make my money grow like that.
Well, and it's not even I'm not good enough. I think there's so many distractions also for all young wealth builders, and the fact that whenever I'm on social media, I see all the crypto eyes, and I see Robinhood is now going on to college campuses, and they're trying to convince people to start investing that way. All these things are distractions to what I call true wealth building. There's nothing wrong with speculating if it's fun for you and this is a hobby that you enjoy, but at some point you need to get really serious about the dollars you are saving and investing are actually going to be something for you in the future. And the easiest thing you can do with that is take advantage of where we are with technology and with the investment marketplaces. That think about all the low-cost providers like Vanguard Investments, Fidelity Investments, Charles Schwab. These are all investment providers where you can buy what's called index target retirement funds, where all you have to do is tell them how much you can save per month, when you need the money. They'll do every bit of the rest of the work, all the asset allocation and everything else, because they'll be super aggressive while you're young. But then as you get older, they'll get more conservative. And I like that because it takes the guesswork out. Because I do think a lot of people who don't come from money, who've never invested, their big question is, okay, this is great. $100 a month would do this for me, but how? Tell me how to do it. And that's why I'm just straight up laying out the answer, because I love how free information and free access has opened up the world of investments to everybody. And look, we're in the greatest time where if you think innovation is exciting now, think about what was going on 10 years ago. Think about what will happen 10 years from now. Innovation is actually accelerating. It's not slowing down. So just by buying into the marketplace, you actually have the opportunity of a lifetime to make money off of that, to get on board with all the innovation, because compounding growth is not only happening with investing, it's also happening with the world, the marketplace, and the economy.
Exactly, because you always hear the saying that time in the market is what's the most important. But there's something else that I feel like a lot of people, you know, are going to think, and it's at the current time, like they might hear the sayings, oh, like the market's near all-time highs and things like this, and they're nervous that, you know, yes, they can buy into the market, but what if it's not the right time? What would you tell to someone that has that thought and they're going to say, oh, well, I'll just wait to invest until the market crashes or until it goes down? What are your thoughts and what would you, you know, tell someone?
Yeah, we've done a lot of research and studies on this, and we've actually showed even if you could, you know, and I'm going to age myself here, but I think hopefully it's got enough nostalgia, you know, Back to the Future. Back to the Future, the whole premise of that movie that came out in the 80s was that Biff had the sports almanac and was able to change, you know, and predict and invest. So what if you could actually have the power of knowing what to invest in, even if you built up cash and waited for the dead bottom of the stock market to buy into? We have done enough research that shows that actually just buying every month likely would do better than if you could pick the best, most opportune time to load up your cash and then invest. Because guess what happens? Markets make money 80% of the time, meaning 8 out of 10 years, usually the financial markets are going up. So for you to say, hey, we're at an all-time high, I should sit on the sidelines, you might find that you're wrong by a year, 2 years, 3 years, and then you'll just keep second-guessing yourself. So here's what I've done to protect myself. I don't care what is going on in the economy. For me personally, I'm buying about every 2 weeks. I have my own money going in every 2 weeks. We call it dollar cost averaging. You can do this when you start working. You can do it through your employer's retirement plan. Right now, if you have a job and you have earned income, you can do it with Roth IRAs. Just start buying every month or buy systematically so that you don't let the emotions get in there, because that's the problem. The typical investor is their own worst enemy, because you're not worried, especially for somebody in their 20s. You could care less what's going on in the economy for 30 to 40 years because it's going to profit. It's going to grow. You just want to keep buying. And I want to even encourage you to be a financial mutant. If the market gets beat up, I want you to get even more excited about what's going on, because that's a chance for you to figure out, hey, how do I go and take advantage of even when things are scary? Because that's what, if you can be a contrarian or a financial mutant, as we like to say, and while everybody's looking for the exits and running out, you're trying to figure out how you can get more in, you will be rewarded your entire lifetime. I mean, this has worked out for me so well. That's why I know I'm a little older than your typical guest. But I am wired like a person like yourself who's a financial mutant in their 20s. I knew what it took. And I can tell you now that I've gone that road less traveled, what it's actually like once you come out the other side of it. And I can tell you, it is very fulfilling if you can take just a little bit, take a little bit of sacrifice through that deferred gratification and have that great, big, beautiful tomorrow, as I always talk about on the show. It is super powerful, and I'm here to tell you it works. Don't let somebody get in your brain and tell you it's not possible. This is all part of the process. You just need to be consistent and be disciplined.
Because time in the market, you know, is so important. You know, it's, you know, like you kind of said, time in the market's more important than timing the market. And one of the luxuries I think that you've had is you've been educating people on their finances for so long. So you've really been able to see, like, what's the difference maker? You know, what makes the millionaires actually millionaires from the people that, you know, started on the journey to try to become millionaires and didn't get there? So I'm really interested in hearing, you know, if you have a few points about, like, what are those big defining, you know, habits or traits that people have that make them successful and help them build wealth?
One of the most fulfilling things about my career. Now, look, I'm blessed that I attract a lot of people wired just like you and I, where financial mutants, where they're going to save, they're disciplined, they're doing it automatically. But I do attract clients also that maybe have decent incomes, but just not a lot of discipline. I have a group of doctors, attorneys who have come to me, and truthfully, I take a lot of credit for their now multi-success, because I convinced them over a decade ago, hey, start saving this percentage of your income now. You know, save 20-25% of your income. Like, oh, I don't know. I mean, there's so many things that I'd like to spend the money on. Is this even worthwhile? And I would convince them, yes, just go on this journey. And the great thing that I love is I would notice after 2 years, 3 years, and we start having some success of stacking the dollars slowly but surely into investments. And they say, well, you know what? Hey, why don't we kick it up a notch? How about if I increase this a little bit more? And then I would also pull them closer in and say, yes, let's increase this instead of another 2%. Why don't we add another 5% onto your savings? And then those same clients, I got to tell you, it is so fulfilling. If you like watching home improvement shows on like HGTV, you've seen nothing when it comes to watching somebody build wealth, and you get to see on the other side where they go, I don't know how we have this much money. I don't remember us saving that much. And you're like, well, it's not you. It's actually the dollar start compounding. We have shown, I mean, you've probably seen this where, Ethan, where we have a chart. If you go to moneyguy.com/resources, we have all kinds of free deliverables. But we have one where it shows like a 20-year-old that starts saving money. By the time they get to 65 at retirement, it's like 95% of their account value is actually like the growth. It's not their savings. Mm-hmm. It's actually like a huge portion of it. And it's not just for 20-year-olds. I mean, this could be for 30-year-olds. It's like 88% is the growth, not their savings. So, I mean, anybody can take advantage of this. And you will look back and you won't be able to tell which dollar actually created the millions. It's because you're just starting the fire. You're just setting it ablaze. And then it does the rest for you. This thing will take off. That's why there are so many support groups for people who overeat, you know, watch too much content, you know, get addicted to social media and other things. There are no support groups for people who get addicted to saving money, because what you become is you just become an empire builder, and everybody is mad at you and jealous of you, but they didn't see that you actually started doing the work when you were in your 20s or even younger, where you started taking a dollar when maybe a dollar was a bigger portion of your life than it was when you're in your 30s and 40s, but you took the sacrifice and it actually turned into something. That's what creates success. And I think we don't celebrate that enough. I think that's something that we ought to be telling all young people, you too can do this, because right now I feel like we're creating where, like, I know I grew up thinking that a lot of successful people, they had to hurt somebody or they had to cheat something to do it. And I'm telling you, nobody hears the stat that 80% of millionaires are first generation. And why is that? How is that stat even possible? The way it's possible is by second generation, 70% of wealth is lost. By third generation, meaning the grandkids, 90% of families have given all the wealth back. This is a naturally cleansing process. You just need to make sure you're on the building side of wealth, not on the consuming, watching. If you are blessed that your parents were good with money, make sure that you continue to be a builder and not watching that money fall into the 70% and then 90% for the grandkids, that where wealth gets squandered. And that breaks my heart, because think of what we could do for the world if everybody understood how compounding growth works. You could truly change the world and how things operate.
Yeah, for sure. And I think I want to go back to one of the things that you said. You said that, you know, when you're 20 and you're investing, that 95% of it is going to be those gains over the period, not the contributions, the money that you're putting in every single month. I'd be interested to hear, because that's, I think, one of the toughest part for young people is they don't necessarily have that patience. And, you know, in that process, when you look at those graphs, it's very slow in the beginning. You know, you barely see the growth, you know, occurring over the first few years. What kind of inspiration can you give to the people to have them stay on the path and not try to get greedy and get rich quick, but instead like stay on that process over the long term?
You just nailed it, Ethan, because that's one of the reasons why we create some of those illustrations, because you're right. After 5 years, I mean, typically a person who just starts saving and investing, it's going to be the exact opposite, where still like 90% of the money in your account is going to be your savings. And you're like, where's all this compounding growth? I don't see it. Even 10 years in the future, I mean, after you've saved and invested for 10 years, the lion's share is still you and what you've saved and invested. It's really not until you get to your second decade that that compounding growth reaches a critical mass where it starts doing it. So I'm trying to essentially put the last chapter in the first chapter so people can see, yes, this is normal. Go play around with a financial calculator. Go listen to a show like The Money Guy Show, where we go ahead and spoil it and show you the way this works so that you can persevere and be consistent during that period when you're like, why does this even matter? Because I'm telling you, if you do this right, your 40-year-old self will want to give you the biggest, sloppiest bear hug you've ever seen because you'll be so excited that you made the sacrifice. Because people want to know, you get to be my age, you hear about these midlife crises. How does this stuff happen? What happens is you get to be in your mid-40s and you look around and you go, man, I'm just not doing what I was meant to do. I haven't made the right decisions. And you start getting very frustrated with your life. I'm telling you, if you will put the work in while you're young, you'll actually have the exact opposite feeling of the midlife crisis. You'll be like, you'll be energized and recharged and be thinking about, okay, I've accomplished this. What am I going to do? Do I need to take my foot off the gas pedal of saving? Or maybe I want to accelerate because I want to be a world changer. You look at it from an optimistic standpoint if you put in the work young enough versus I think the defeat is the defeat feeling that a lot of people feel because they didn't put that work in. And that's what take it from a guy who's multiple decades into this. If you can just do a little, it turns into a lot. Just don't let somebody else take you off track, because that's where all the negativity comes from, is all the people who have made mistakes. They like to pay it forward by telling others and generations younger than them that this is not even worth trying. And I'm telling you, from somebody who's helps people create this, who's been inspiring people for now two decades, you can do this. Just make the decision. I don't care what background you're from. I don't care what education. Anybody can save and invest $100 a month. Start doing it and use like the Fidelity Investments, the Vanguards, the Charles Schwabs. Do those index target retirement funds. Your money will grow faster than you ever could realize if you just stay steady, consistent, and disciplined. You will be rewarded.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is just the consistency over a long period of time. And you know, like you say on your podcast, you know, a lot of the people probably listening to this podcast are also financial mutants. You know, they're the people, mm-hmm. they're listening to this show. So they really want to get on that process of investing and getting that ball rolling, per se. But I also have gotten very interested recently, and you actually made a video about this on one of your podcast episodes, about investing too much money. Now, one of the other great things that we have by being young is, you know, we are able to have some of those experiences. Where do you find that middle ground, you know, between what's investing too much and you're almost sacrificing the present moment too much to where you don't get to enjoy it versus, you know, not investing enough and not setting yourself up for a successful retirement?
I love mentoring other financial mutants because I've done this. My co-host is Bo Hansen. I hired mm-hmm. Bo right out of college, and I've had to, because financial mutants naturally are typically achiever mentality type personalities, meaning that you have a mental checklist. In your 20s, you think you're supposed to accomplish this, and you just start going through it. You know, hey, I'm going to graduate college. I'm going to pay off my debt. I'm going to start investing. I'm going to buy a new car. I'm going to get my first house. You know, there's all these checklists. And by the way, they don't go away after you leave your 20s. In your 30s, you're thinking of all kind of other things. You know, you go through these mental gymnastics of all the things you're supposed to accomplish that a lot of times, if you're not careful, you can miss out on the sweetness, the awesomeness of each decade of your life. So that's why I like to tell people is make sure, I want you to be a saver and investor for the future and understand deferred gratification, but I also want you to take enough for yourself that you enjoy each decade of your life, because that's the other part that will be the antidote for bitterness in the future, is to make sure every decade of your life you look back on with a fondness and enjoy it. So I always tell people, that's why I like to give guidance of, look, if you're starting in your 20s, somewhere between 15 to 20%, it won't happen overnight. I mean, your first job, you might be able to only save, maybe it's 5%. But every time you get a pay raise, I want you to, you know, devoting a portion of that to the pay raise. But there will reach a point by the time you reach your 30th birthday, I need you to be saving 25% of your gross income. But there's some of you who might reach that much sooner, maybe 22, 23. You're so good with money that you're saving 30, 40, 50% of your income. And maybe that's because you want to retire early as part of the FIRE movement. That's okay to have purpose and to have a why, but just make sure you know what that why is, because if you're doing it because all you can daydream about is how awesome it's going to be 57 years of age, retired on the beach, you might find that's not as fulfilling as you think it is. I mean, so that's why I always tell people, make sure in your 20s that you are still doing, you know, building memories, traveling, figuring out, you can do it cheaply. I mean, I went to Italy when I was in my 20s, and we did it so cheap that there's so many laughable stories on either how we got ripped off by the locals or we are dragging luggage down a cobblestone road. But those things turn out to be sweeteners in the future because memories actually blossom and get better. So all the things that you're crying about and lamenting about when you're 20s, but just the sheer fact that I did the adventure has created some incredible things. Just make sure you are taking time to enjoy each season of your life. Because this, I can tell you as a guy who's approaching 50, it goes so much faster than I ever could have imagined. And I will tell you, if you can do it well and go the road less traveled, you will look back on a fondness and not, I told this to my, I have a high school daughter. And I was like, there is not a decade in my life that I thought that, man, I wish I was back in high school or I wish I was back in college. I've actually enjoyed every decade more and more and more. And I think that has to do with being purposeful, understanding that we only have limited time on this planet, and just making sure that in addition to having those mental checklists of what success is, that you're putting enough time in there to actually create the nuggets that make life worthwhile too. Because, you know, there's a fine line between financial mutant and what's called a miser. Ebenezer Scrooge, you know, around Christmas time, we all watch, so we love those holiday movies. But there is a fine line from being the person that all you do is live to work versus the person that can not only enjoy what you are put on this planet to do, but also create memories, be fun to hang out with. Because I always pick on it's one thing in your 20s, because I remember, you know, you go out to dinner with all your friends, you're worried about how you're splitting the ticket, but there needs to come a point in your life where you graduate, you know, past worried about that, sweating the little stuff that you can't even enjoy life. I mean, and that's probably, I don't know if I dialed it in deep enough for you, Ethan, but that's kind of the guidance I would give to somebody who's struggling with that.
Yeah, no, I think that was great because, you know, that's something I would say I'm trying to work on more now because I'm a very, like, I'm a lot like Bo, your co-host. I am that way. I'm an achiever type, like things, get them checked off the checklist. And I just thought it was very interesting when you said it because, you know, the term that people actually use for it is destination addiction, where you have this destination in the future that you think life's going to be so much better then, you know, and you keep working towards it every day. And then you get there and realize, well, it's not as good as I thought it was going to be, you know? So like you said, I think the really important thing that I got out of it was, you know, really looking at your why, you know, why are you doing it? And be very sure that why is big enough, because if not, then you're realizing, well, there's no point for why I'm doing this, why I'm working the extra hours, you know, why I'm investing that extra amount. And, you know, for some people, investing that extra amount is good because that is what their why is backing, like early retirement, things like that. But you've got to really, you know, make it towards what your why is. So before I get into the last question, where can the listeners of this episode find you?
Yeah, I mean, we're easy enough to find, just moneyguy.com. We're on all the social media platforms, whether it's Twitter, whether it's YouTube, whether it's podcasting, and podcasting's everywhere. If you're on Spotify, we got you. If you're on Apple, we're there. I mean, we're pretty much everywhere, but I would encourage you, please take advantage of the free stuff. Moneyguy.com and then /resources, tons of free stuff to get you motivated. And you just talked about, Ethan, I think it is so important to know what your why is and to be purposeful, because we've done shows on the dark side of being wealthy without a purpose. I mean, I got to tell you how many doctors and attorneys that come to us with big pots of money, but actually hate going to work. And that is a horrible thing to be 39 to 43 years of age, where you still might be working another 10 to 15 years and actually hate going to work. So I always tell people, if you can understand your why, you don't lose focus. And it's not just that I want to have $5 million or I want to have $10 million, because yes, those numbers might be good to have, but if you don't have a purpose for, and it's just the ultimate driver is just to get to that threshold without the why, you might find it's a lot emptier. I mean, I always talk about the hedonic treadmill. This is a concept. You could go think of the fanciest car you could want to drive. I promise you, if you drive that car for about 3 or 4 months, you will get adapted to it very quickly, and you'll already be trying to figure out what's the next thing that you could buy. This is why things never are as fulfilling as memories or other things, is because it's constantly, it's going to get old, and there's going to be something newer or better that you'll want to invest in.
Well, what you just said there is probably the perfect lead-in to the last question I ask all my guests, which is, why is wealth building important to you? You know, what's the purpose of building wealth for you?
Yeah, Ethan, as I shared with you, I mean, I'm at the point in life now where I get so much purpose out of growing the firm, growing our audience. And I feel like as long as we have people who want to do this for a living, people who need this guidance to get inspired and grow. I mean, heck, that's why even before we started recording, I was kind of hitting you up to see if you wanted to eventually, you know, come work for us or if I could hire you, because I could already spot that you are kind of wired in that financial mentality just like I am. But that is the big why for me. I mean, I love people who are purposeful and want to retire so they can go build memories. But part of my building memories is helping people get passionate about saving for the future, kind of discovering their inner financial mutant and then living their best financial life.
Wow. So that's awesome. And as Brian said, he is here to help. So I'm giving a second to this. Make sure to go to his website, go to the resources and check some of them out. They were huge for me when I first got it started out. So I know they'd be great for you. Brian, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and have a great day.
Ethan, thanks so much. Really had a pleasure and had a blast actually doing it.
Awesome. See ya. Thank you all so much for listening. But before you click off this episode, make sure to hit that follow or subscribe button on this podcast so you never miss an episode when it's released. If you are listening on Apple Podcasts and you enjoyed what you heard, please consider giving a 5-star rating and review. And if you do end up leaving a review, DM me a screenshot on Instagram at RealEthanLang and I'll share it on my story as a thank you. If you have any questions about really anything from this episode or just something that's on your mind, reach out to me on Instagram at RealEthanLang by shooting me a DM and I will make sure to get back to you. If you've made it to this point, I just want to end this episode by saying thank you. Have a great day and hopefully I will see you for next week's episode.
The Young Wealth Podcast is hosted by Ethan Lang. The information provided by the host and guest is for informational purposes only and does not constitute financial, tax, investment, or legal advice. You are responsible for your own money and your own decisions. Information, content, or other materials created by Making Sense of Finance, LLC do not constitute a solicitation, recommendation, endorsement, or offer by Making Sense of Finance and or any third-party service provider to buy or sell any securities or other financial instruments.